The only time you'll ever be on a treadmill with me at the gym yes. is if I'm on your iPod.
Take them everywhere.
We're starting now.
Well, I'm Justin Souther.
And I'm Ken Hankey.
Mount Express Critics.
And we are what is apparently now known as the Elitist Bastards. We're coming to you this week from... Where the hell are
the
we?
The Critics Lounge.
Thank you. I wasn't expecting...
At the Fine
to...
Arts Theater
Thank
in downtown
you. I didn't
Nashville.
Think I was going this far. I thought okay. you were taking over. Uh-huh. Well, I saw Robin Hood this week. This past week. And the best thing I can say about it is it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. That, however, isn't saying a whole lot because I thought it was going to be absolutely painfully awful. I was expecting to spend 2 hours and 20 minutes of cinematic hell. And instead, it was just sort of okay. If you don't know, it's not even really Robin Hood. It's Origins of Robin Hood. And as a result, what we have is Robin Hood's backstory. We have Robin Hood and how he became Robin. Well, actually, he's not even Robin Hood until the end of the picture. But he is Robin Longstride. I'm leaving that name so alone. And he is fighting with Richard the Lionheart, who is... Danny Houston with the most fetching set of curls you have ever seen. In France, against filthy Frenchmen. I'm not sure why they're filthy Frenchmen, but they are, according to the film. These French people are just duplicitous, no matter what. They're bad news.
Are they the type of French people that speak in British accents?
No, they're the type of French people that speak in bad French accents. They're kind of like the soldiers in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, okay. who are... You know, go away or I will taunt you again. They're that type of French.
Okay.
You know, so the problem with all this is do you really need Robin Hood's backstory? Do you need to spend 140 minutes on Robin Hood's backstory when every other version has been able to tell you in, oh, I don't know, half a dozen lines who Robin is and why he's doing this? So, you know, if that appeals to you, and you might like the fact that Robin has been given a dose of serious comic book superhero angst. This Robin Hood has childhood trauma and daddy issues, which means he gets to sulk like Christian Bale on a bad day. And all of this makes it sound like I think the film is really horrible, and it's not, as long as you don't think it's a Robin Hood picture. It's an adequate... It's never really boring, although it could have lost a good 20, 30 minutes, and it would have been fine. It's not boring. It's an adequate, ancient times, spectacle battle movie, but it ain't Robin Hood. If you're looking at the film in terms of Ridley Scott's direction, it's not his worst, which is to say, it's no Kingdom of Heaven. It's no A Good Year, but it's nothing to get excited about. It's competent. It's competent, but I will say that, and I've been saying this for some considerable time now, I am over the action scenes done with the high-speed shutter that makes them have that little flicker to them as they're occurring. I can't imagine that that is new-looking to anybody because it's been around for at least 10 years, if not longer. Film's got a strong cast. I mean, they certainly spent the money. You've got not just Russell Crowe, who is fine. But whenever Russell Crowe is in a movie, I always remember why Russell Crowe is popular. And then I forget about him in between films. I don't know why. You got Cate Blanchett, who's fine as Lady Marian. Don't expect Maid Marian, because she's certainly not maidenly, and she's, let's say, she has a sharp tongue. So a lot of the interplay between Lady Marian and Robin Hood, who is actually impersonate, for reasons I'm not going to go into, is impersonating her late husband. A lot of that is banter back and forth of the quibbling. You know, we know it's going to lead to a clinch, but we've got, you know, an hour or so to get to that. So it's a, that's in there. She's fine for that role. Max von Sydow is good in it. Danny Houston is underutilized. I'm trying to think who else was. William Hurt is very good in the film. There is this one significant problem, and that is that Prince slash King John is played by someone whose name I cannot even remember at this point, and is wholly forgettable. And he's your main bad guy, really. I mean, Mark Strong is your actual nemesis for Robin, and then, of course, you know, and Mark Strong, you really can't, at this point, he's well on his way to becoming the villain for, you know, he's the bad guy to go to, especially after Sherlock Holmes. He's like the primary source for bad guys. But the guy playing King John is, he's basically a petulant, spoiled brat. That's the one note he plays the character on, and he plays that character that way from the first scene till the last. He's boring.
And it sounds like it's all, as far as the cast goes, it'd be more surprising if they weren't good.
Yeah, well, and the cast is so good that it's almost impossible that they would be bad.
Right.
It's just that...
Are they ever better than just good? Or?
No, nobody is ever better than just good, really, when it comes right down to it. But they're very good at what they do. But that's it. You know, it's like the film is, you know, scales the heights of being okay, and they are good. But they're all good professional actors. I don't really expect them to be actively bad. I could see them walking through something, but not being actively bad.
Well, last week we discussed upcoming films, and one of them was Letters to Juliet, which I think our biggest reservation with the prospects of watching this movie were that the entire thing is spelled out in a minute and a half worth of trailer.
No, let's be fair. It's 2.5 minutes worth of trailer.
Is it 2.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was 2:20. Okay.
Nevertheless, the entire film was packed into this 2.5 minutes. After watching the movie, I can safely say that the entire movie is in the trailer.
So what you're saying is it does not turn out that Franco Nero is a serial killer with 100 bodies buried beneath his vineyards.
No.
Darn.
Mr. Wonderful. It makes it an extremely difficult film to really talk about because there's...
You've seen the film.
There's nothing to say about it. I mean, the premise of Letters to Juliet is that we have this... Amanda Seyfried plays this fact checker for The New Yorker who... is engaged to Gail Garcia Bernal, who's a very busy gentleman opening a restaurant. They're taking a... Because they're these sort of unduly rich types that can just...
No, the movie unspecifically rich type.
Yeah, yes. They can just... They're not taking a honeymoon. They're taking a pre-honeymoon for 6 weeks to Italy.
Gee, I drove my wife to Tallahassee to see The Ruling Class for a honeymoon. That was,
yes.
You know.
Well, they haven't made a movie about you.
Yeah, I know. Yet, so. It's a mistake, but.
So they go off to Italy, and while he's off buying cheese, I think.
Well, of course.
Yes, and going to wine auction, she ends up at the house of Juliet from Romeo and Juliet, where they.
It occurs to no one that these are fictional characters, huh?
No.
Okay.
But all of these. Where she finds all of these sobbing, heartbroken women leaving notes for Juliet. And within this, she finds a 50-year-old letter from who turns out to be Vanessa Redgrave asking what to do about her blowing off this guy she was in love with 50 years ago. So she writes her letter. Vanessa Redgrave and her seemingly rich grandson ditch London to fly to, at the drop of a hat, to come to Italy to track this guy down. So it's just...
Wouldn't we all?
Well, if you could afford it.
Well, I guess that's true, yes.
So, and there, I think it's like, and they're just this collection of pleasant, rich but not very stylish rich people, which is kind of disappointing. They're not very good at being rich.
No, if I'm going to deal with rich people, I want them to be stylish.
Yes. And not look like they shop at Dress Barn, I think. Which, there's nothing wrong with that, but if you're rich, I feel like you should be.
Well, if this guy shops at Dress Barn, no. We're on the route of a whole new movie.
That would have been much more enjoyable.
I think it probably would.
But the whole thing's, it looks nice. I mean, they're in Italy. They go to all the nice parts of Italy. They're not in the, it's all vineyards and.
Well, it looks nice. That's reminds me of when I told Don Mancini that Sofia Coppola, Marie Antoinette movie was really pretty, and he said, "Well, give me, $15 million and unlimited access to Versailles, and I'll bring you back pretty pictures, too."
Amanda Seyfried's character starts to fall for this
squinty blonde Brit, yes.
Yes, while Vanessa Redgrave tracks down her long-lost love, and they immediately fall back in love after 50 years, and because people never change over 50 years. You can just pick right back up. And it pretty much does exactly what you're thinking it's going to do, which I guess to a certain extent is fine. I'm sure there's a market for movies that do exactly what you want them to, but.
Well, doing exactly what you want them to is not entirely the same as doing exactly everything you expect and saw in the trailer.
Right. In this case, it's pretty much the same thing.
Well, you're talking about movies that do what you want them to do. I have to admit, and it was a shock to me, probably the pleasantest time I had at a movie this weekend was with a Formula picture, and that was with the Queen Latifah movie, Just Right. It does nothing surprising. It follows the standard romantic comedy formula, as it needs to do. It duplicates every, you have the meet cute, you have the penultimate gloomy reel where it doesn't look like things are going to work out even though you know that they have to in the last reel. Though that one is a little bit refreshing, it's done a little bit differently this time. What really makes it work, other than Queen Latifah, who gives a plus value to just about anything, she is almost always wonderful, and the movie she's in almost always not. I think I've seen two movies where the movie was actually maybe on a par with her, and that was Chicago and Stranger Than Fiction. And other than that, she's pretty much been relegated to really dumb movies. Well, this one isn't a particularly intelligent movie, but it is entertaining and it's pleasant. And one of the things about it that I think makes it pleasant is you actually like these characters. They're like really genuinely nice people, and they're not cliches either. I mean, the Common, who plays the NBA player that she falls for, is not at all what you are, it's going to be a jive-talking NBA player and all this kind of thing. And it's actually quite different than that. It is a, plays jazz piano, he listens to Charlie Mingus and Joni Mitchell, and it's very much not the cliche that you're expecting. Just Right, I mean, I hate to say it, it's kind of like it was Just Right. It is exactly what it sets out to be, but it does it so well that I didn't mind. To me, it is an example of a movie that did what I wanted it to do, not what there was absolutely nothing else it could do.
And it sounds like it helps that the leads are good.
Yeah, the leads are good. The funny thing about it is that Queen Latifah and Common have pretty good on-screen chemistry. But when he's with her friend, played by Paula Patton, who is good in the film, who, of course, she's supposed to be the really pretty one versus,
right,
Queen Latifah, which is why he's going for her. And the big thing there is that what they have, there of course are large chunks of the film that are devoted to him with Paula Patton, and there is no chemistry whatsoever between the two of them. And it's not just because they don't, they're not going to end up together. There's just something is they don't feel right on the screen at all.
So at this juncture, we're going to, I guess, start a segment where we take questions from
our faithful listeners. since this is sort of one-sided and they can't really address us, although, you know, they may have yelled at the radio or the whatever, but, you know, several times by now. You can see how old I am. I think
the
radio. Yeah, okay. They wound up the little dog that looks into the horn, too. That, you know, they can send questions that they have for us. The best thing to do probably is to send them to expressmovies@aol.com. That's express, like Mountain Express, movies, all one word, at aol.com. And we will read your question on the air, as long as it's not too obscene. We will,
or especially if it's obscene.
Well, if it's obscene, we'll have to do.
We won't read all of it.
No, and if it involves anything to do with us and a stout piece of rope, then I'm not going to read it. But, you know, well, I might. But, you know, in general, we will respond to any reasonable question, and possibly even to,
if it's the right kind of unreasonable.
Well, that's true. I might even respond to certain reasonable requests. You never know.
Wow, that's true. We've already, I guess, we can't do it yet, but I guess a gorilla suit has been requested.
The gorilla suit has been requested, but, you know, and but since we're strictly audio at this point, I could lie and say that Justin looks very fetching in his gorilla suit, but unfortunately, he doesn't have one.
No.
So
Ken's wearing it.
You don't have to tell everybody. Jeez. Okay. Now, we have had one question that has been put to us, and that is, how do we decide who reviews what?
Well, for the longest time, the...
I'm going to come out badly on this.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
The answer was that it was... whatever was least convenient for Ken to make, I would go handle. Which somehow always...
I don't
always
make any of these movies. You mean...
To make it too.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Were the ones I would handle, which somehow still ended up being... the ones that were inconvenient for Ken to make it to were always the worst things coming out that week. It's very strange how that worked out.
It's not like I don't see anything bad.
Your percentage of good to bad is probably...
it's probably higher. Yeah, okay. That's it. You probably do get more of the dregs than I do. That's because I'm older than you.
Okay.
See, that's all that really
takes. I can handle it better.
Just, you know, I'm in my 50s. I don't know how many Wayans Brothers pictures I could take.
Well, you're just...
I mean, Little Man was definitely a stretch. Right. Trust me on that. I'm not right. I wasn't right before, but I'm really not right after.
You went your entire life without having to watch that many Wayans Brothers movies.
Well, that's true. But I didn't build up an immunity. You grew up on crap like this.
I don't know if I'm worried with... when I get to your age, what shape I'm going to be in.
Well, I hadn't thought of it quite like that. Now, you did threaten, however, that if you had to review Marmaduke, that you would quit.
Yes.
Now,
but now you've stuck me with what looks like Sex and the City 2 next week.
I have not stuck you with Sex and the City 2.
You've threatened me with it and then offered to trade Marmaduke.
You are the Sex and the City expert because you reviewed the last one. You pull this on me every time a Tyler Perry movie comes out, so I don't see any reason.
I just want you to be a completist as far as Tyler Perry goes, and I would hate to stop you at that point.
Well, at this point I am, but I think you should be a Sex and the City completist. But, I tell you what.
I can't, there's no, because the TV show, I couldn't be. I'm not watching all of them.
Well, you could.
But I'm not.
Well, so. But it doesn't mean you couldn't. However,
yes.
I will trade you Sex and the City because I did see the first one. Yeah. I sat through it with you just because I'm a good guy.
If you do Marmaduke. Well, I have a sneaking suspicion you won't be sitting through number two with me.
Well, I might.
You won't, though, but... I don't know. I don't feel like... I've had enough talking animal movies for the time being, I feel like.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yes.
I sat through the trailer when at Furry Vengeance. Oh, my Lord.
I don't know if I've seen the new one. Maybe not. I haven't seen the new trailer.
Talking animals?
But I saw the runtime for Sex and the City 2, which I believe is at 144 minutes. what I saw.
Well, the first one was unbearably long, yes. So I see no reason why this
I feel
be
like
short.
It's challenged me at this point. I almost have to watch it.
In other words, I'm watching Marmaduke.
Yes, that also helps, but I feel like somehow Sex and the City 2 has thrown the gauntlet down.
You are cruel beyond words.
Yes. Ken usually just goes, I don't want to watch this, I can't make it to this. Something along those lines.
But there have been times when you have just, called me up and go, I assume I'm watching, insert name of piece of crap
well,
here.
Well, you go 3 years of, this has Justin's name written all over it. I pretty much just assume I'm getting...
Well, that's true, but
But I consider it paying my dues, Ken.
But you have brought it on now. I am determined I'm going to sit through Sex and the City 2.
Okay, good. This Thursday, as every Thursday for the past month, will be our...
And every Thursday on into perpetuity for all
yes.
we know.
Well, we are having our Thursday Horror Picture Show at the Carolina, Asheville, which was once...
The Hollywood. It's out on Hendersonville
Road.
It's
been renovated for about a year now, I guess, was the reason.
Something like that, yeah. And what used to be the cheesy, tacky old game room, which is what got the theater kind of a rep as a kids' theater, mm-hmm. has now been turned into a very nice state-of-the-art screening room, which is where we run these movies.
And they're every Thursday at 8.
And we're there and can be, abused or whatever you want to do. If you want to come, just look at us or, you can look at us for free. It costs 50 cents to touch.
You can touch me for free.
Justin's cheaper than I am. Okay. I'm older and I'm more seasoned. I don't need it.
But this week we are running Ken Russell's Gothic.
Yes.
Which I have not seen. I've seen a lot of Russell, but that's one of the ones I haven't made it around to.
Gothic is actually one of the ones that kind of almost falls through the cracks because there's been a problem with who owns the copyright on it. And I'm not sure who does own the copyright on it, except it's not Ken Russell. It's from 1986. In this country, we tend to lump that together with his Vestron pictures. We think of it as being part of Gothic, Salome's Last Dance, Lair of the White Worm, and The Rainbow. We think of them as all as one, but it actually is a separate film. Vestron picked it up in this country for distribution. And it's very Ken Russell.
If you haven't seen a Ken Russell picture,
it's incomprehensible to you, but...
Right.
And if you haven't seen a Ken Russell picture, well, it's high time you did, and this isn't a bad one to start with. It takes place at the Villa Diodati in Switzerland, and it's about the famous house party that took place at this villa that Lord Byron was in. And it's Byron and Mary Shelley and Percy Shelley, Mary's half-sister Claire Claremont, and and Byron's physician / biographer / boyfriend / whipping boy, Dr. Polidori. And it's the... Put it in its really simplest terms, it's 19th century poets as rock stars living in a big palatial house for the weekend, taking drugs and having hallucinations. Of course, the drug of choice at that time, they're all hitting laudanum, except for Mary. Mary Shelley, you will notice, never actually takes a drug. Everybody else is stoned out of their minds, but she's not. I don't know how many people even know what laudanum is anymore. It used to be sold as, it's an opiate. It is an opium solution. It's opium in an alcohol solution. And it used to be sold over the counter.
Depp takes them from hell?
Yes.
Okay.
It was very common. It's pretty much what Coleridge was addicted to.
Okay.
And for that matter, probably even William Wordsworth, but that gets into a whole different area. And in any case, it starts out more or less innocently, and then they decide to have a seance where they conjure up sort of a composite of all their own fears and create a monster. And this, of course, is where reality ends and fantasy begins. It's not very clear in the movie. It's very deliberately hallucinatory all the way through. But this is essentially the genesis for Frankenstein, which is what came from that weekend, was that Mary Shelley would write that book.
That story of how Frankenstein came about is pretty well known. How accurate do you think the... I mean, well, beyond the obvious Russell accoutrement.
I will say what I said in my review, that I think that it is probably, as Ken once said to me when I asked him how accurate his autobiography was, it's true in spirit.
Okay.
So, but as far as being factual, who was there?
Right.
Who really knows what went on?
But, I mean, as far as it's...
I mean, the gathering is reasonable enough. Right. I mean, that's you know, and that we do know happened.
I guess it's sort of the same way that Listomania is.
No, although Listomania is probably its closest companion piece.
Okay.
Except it doesn't have musical numbers. It does have a Thomas Dolby score on it, though.
Okay.
So I suppose that kind of puts it in the same Rick Wakeman category as... But, you know, let's look at it this way. You can come see it, if you're local, for free. When it came out, I drove 235 miles to see this picture. You can certainly drive out to the Carolina. City Island is this really weird situation where, and I've never seen this happen before, but Bill Benosky, who owns the Carolina, didn't think that this movie that opened at the Biltmore Grand and closed within a week was given a fair chance because there was no promotion for it. So he is reopening this picture this Friday. And it's a small indie film with Andy Garcia that, for whatever reason, he thinks deserves a break. Justin has seen the film. He reviewed it originally.
And I think the thinking behind it is that, from what I understand, in other cities, it's been doing very well for a small independent
type of film it is, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very much in the realm of crowd pleaser. I'm sure it's one of those things that if it played film festivals, it won its audience award kind of thing. But it's got a very, very, like, a very good central performance from Andy Garcia. And I think what's surprising about it and what I found interesting about it was that it's a role he's playing that's, because he's usually, you think of him as Godfather 3 or the bad guy from the Ocean's 11 films. And it's those are much more confident. Like, the characters are very confident and slick. And in this case, he's sort of, his character is very bumbling. And it's, he's got a lot of issues with telling the truth, but it's more so, it's not that he feels the need to lie, it's that he doesn't know how to interact with people. So it's got he's very good in it. Emily Mortimer is very good in it. It's not gonna blow anybody away, but it's a very nice little film.
I'm going into Shrek 4 with no preconceptions whatsoever. I'm hoping that Shrek 4 is better than 3.
Right.
I really liked 1. I really liked 2. I will have to say they have not become movies that I've watched over and over and over again, but I really enjoyed them an awful lot at the time. And in fact, I believe one of them came at least close to being on my top 10 list that year. I'm prepared to give it a fair chance because it's the kind of movie that, although it has some bad reviews, I also know it's the type of movie that a lot of people are just waiting to jump on because 3 was lame, and it's the fourth movie in a series, so they're just going to jump on it anyway.
But at the same time, diminished returns.
Diminished returns, yes.
Yeah. And 4 movies. I
mean. Yeah, that usually is not a good sign right there. So that means that you get MacGruber.
Right.
Which is definitely better because you at least have some kind of an idea.
I have an idea. I know I've seen, and for anybody that doesn't know, MacGruber is based on a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Which I'm assuming is some sort of parody of MacGyver?
Yes.
Okay.
From what I know, I've seen one in the past.
That's really...
I don't remember anything about it. I remember they're about 30 seconds long. And so, we're getting a full-length feature based on a 30-second-long Saturday Night Live get
spoof of
MacGyver,
old TV show.
Yes. So, the odd thing about this, however, is that at least the early reviews, I haven't looked lately, were very positive.
Yeah, much more so than the Shrek ones. The Shrek ones are right down the middle, and almost all of the good reviews for Shrek come from people that, oh, let's not mince words, they're quote whores.
Right. In this case, it's nobody extraordinarily respectable, but it's still interesting that we're getting...
extraordinarily respectable.
I mean...
on the continuum, where do we fall?
It's not Andrew Saris
saying,
I loved MacGruber. So...
I'd pay good money to read that phrase, but...
But at the same time, it's a Saturday Night Live movie. I can't remember the last time. Was there ever... I have childhood memories of liking Wayne's World, but...
Well, the thing about it is that I cannot even identify the star.
I believe it's Will Forte, I believe is his name.
You know, well, that is indeed his name. But I can't... I mean, I know I have sat through things that he's in, but I have no mental image of him whatsoever. Right. Of course, I didn't sit through The Brothers Solomon.
I forgot I had sat through that too. You just mentioned it. So,
have I twisted the knife?
Yes.
Oh, no.
I remember absolutely nothing about that movie. They adopt a kid or something, I think.
I remember you didn't like it.
Well, it was bad.
Well, okay.
So, obviously. As far as MacGruber goes, I have hopes that maybe it's... Every so often we get a dumb-looking comedy that turns out to be dumb
and sort
of fun.
Yeah, it does happen, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe we're due. So hopefully we're getting that with MacGruber.
Maybe we'll be getting
MacGruber. I don't know why the world is yearning for a MacGyver spoof, but who knows?
Well, and I guess the prestige film, the James Ivory film, The City of Your Final Destination, falls to me.
Right.
And I'm not a huge Merchant Ivory fan. Of course, James Ivory's longtime partner, Ishmael Merchant, died in 2005. This is actually Ivory's first film without him. So that'll be kind of interesting in and of itself. But most of their films are... Morris is an exception. Remains of the Day is an exception. The White Countess was an exception. But most of their films are a little too genteel for my taste. I guess the word I'm looking for, they tend to kind of bore me. Is that what I'm trying to say? I think so.
Well, if that's what you're trying to say.
I think that's what I'm trying to say, yeah. But... You know, this is a week where your other openings are MacGruber and Shrek 4. So this, you know, I have some kind of hopes for this. And the cast is Anthony Hopkins can be good. Usually Anthony Hopkins is just being Anthony Hopkins, but he can be good. And Laura Linney is frequently good. In fact, she's very rarely less than good. But I have a feeling that the movie, from everything that I've read, is taking place in Merchant Ivory Land, which is not a term I like to use because I think it's overused and misused, but I really think the world that this film takes place in is probably, has just become so irrelevant that there's not going to be much point to the film. But at least unlike many James Ivory films, it clocks in at slightly under 2 hours. Usually they go on and on and on. So, let's say...
I would be careful about assuming this movie will be classier than something called MacGruber. You know what happens when we assume, Ken.
Yeah, that's
all I'm saying.
Yeah, well...
Okay, so once again, if you have any questions for us, any comments even, you can email us at expressmovies@aol.com. That's XPRESS movies.
One word.
Yes, one word. At AOL.com.
At AOL.com. And you are?
I'm Justin Sowler.
And I am?
Ken Henke.
Thank you. I'm glad to have that cleared up for me.
Yes.
And we are?
Elitist Bastards.
And we've been to the movies.
Yes.